Hello, cyclocross friends, and thanks for tuning in for episode 62 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, we have an encore presentation, a return visit from Lindsay Bear. Lindsay was first on the show just back in episode 58, so really not that long ago. Lindsay stopped by the CXR's headquarters this evening, also known as my house, to talk about a project that we got coming up that I think you guys are going to dig. We actually discuss it later in this episode. And while she was here, we figured, hey, why not turn on the microphones, go back down into the basement since she survived once. It was really becoming a bad joke. And record again. So that's what we did. This episode is sponsored again by Health IQ. They're coming back. We love that. I love having repeat sponsors. HealthIQ.com/CXHairs. Go fill out a short questionnaire for them. Gives us, props for sending you along. And it's also good for you because it gives you an insight into life insurance, gets you the best prices you can. They like having people who are healthy, who are active. They can get you better quotes on life insurance. And we want you to go and check out their services. So healthiq.com/CXHairs. It helps us keep the podcast alive if you go and support those sponsors. Chicago, Rafa Cycle Club, Sunday of Worlds. What is that, the 29th? 1 p.m. Come out, hang out. We're going to watch the races and talk about them, men's and women. It's going to be a good time. There should be beer there. You should be there too. We would love to see you, Chicago. Rafa Cycle Club, 1 p.m. Sunday of Worlds weekend. That's coming up. Finally, please get in touch with me, feedback@cxhairs.com. You can also call the hotline, 405-CXHAIRS. Leave a message. Tell us what we're doing right, doing wrong, your concerns, your comments. Another TBD TIE for Worlds will be heading your way next week. But heading your way right now is my conversation with Lindsay Bear. You've come back. Here. You didn't learn your lesson.
I live on the edge.
I know. Back in the basement again.
What is it? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Fool me twice and you're in a ditch in the bottom of the basement.
Wow. This got dark quickly.
Jokes.
I'm going to need more scotch.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a different brand tonight.
Yes.
People were impressed with your selection from episode one of our conversation.
I do. So that I actually prefer the peatier scotches. This is not a peatier one. this was a birthday gift as well, actually. This time it came from somebody else, so that's good. But yeah, I prefer a little bit peatier, but this is still very nice. And I figure we'll just keep going through my collection.
Yeah, so we could just do scotch talk.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about it.
About scotch?
I mean, I appreciate this. It's good. I'm enjoying it. But as far as like...
Next time I'm connoisseur. I'm pouring you some Bacardi.
No. I can tell the difference between good and not good. Don't get me wrong. But like going into, I'd need to sit down and figure out my appreciation of peatiness.
Yeah, it's basically, do you like the taste of burned swamp or not? And
Got
I do.
It.
I really
okay.
do.
You're a burnt swamp person.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Well, this has been Scotch Hairs Radio.
Wow.
That was bad.
It's like dad humor.
Well, we were just talking about my kids, so that makes sense. So, Lindsay, since the last time you were in my basement, we sort of made a running joke. We talked about you flirting with the idea of unretirement.
Yes.
And now this is how, what?
As I often do, I moved quickly from flirting to full on marriage.
There you go. You're fully committed.
Zing.
Now. Yeah.
People who know my history are actually laughing at that. That's like four podcasts from now. We can talk about that. Yeah. I am definitely unretired, as in training aggressively and brutally. It kind of hurts to walk or wake up or breathe, that kind of training. I read an article the other day where Joe Dombrowski was quoted saying he trains like 14 hours a week at this point. And I guess I kind of figured at that level, people would be training like 80 hours a week, and therefore I should try and match that. And now I'm starting to think I might be slightly overcooked, but it's winter and I'm training, and that's what I do. So yeah, full on training now.
Where do you feel like you are training wise? I mean, did
I am winning winter training. I'm crushing. I am destroying. So I've been indoors almost exclusively forever since the beginning of time, AKA nearly December. Partly because of weather, because this area is unforgiving and terrible. And then also because I just had LASIK. So I figured I should stay inside and keep the eyes out of the wind and the elements and whatnot. But with training indoors, it really gives you an opportunity to focus on just the workout, like efficiency, working hard, etc. I go to CompuTrainer a lot at my coach's studio. And that's a lot of people who are like 70-ish, and they're really aggressive about their riding. And so, of course, I feel like I've got to be extra aggressive because I have to really crush it. And the result of that is I'm on the trainer for like 2.5 hours several times a week in a CompuTrainer studio trying to beat triathletes and impress them with my mad watts. And I'm so tired. So tired.
When they're on the CompuTrainer, do they have a water bottle cage on the back of their saddle?
There's a mix. You get the back of the saddle. You get the water bottle between the aero bars with the straw. You get some people with the regular water bottle.
Do you ever feel like you want to steal the person's water bottle in front of just to throw them off their game?
No. There was a woman who at the old studio that I used to go to had a Camelback backpack in CompuTrainer. And I was almost impressed by that, because the level of commitment it takes to be like, I'm going to rock this bad boy is...
Well, you don't want to, you know, it's unsafe to take your hands off handlebars.
She said something about that, actually. And I thought maybe she was kidding, but I don't think she was kidding. But then again, like this past week, post LASIK, I needed to wear sunglasses to keep the wind out of my eyes. And so I'm wearing sunglasses, aviators, because that's what I happen to have handy. So I'm wearing aviators, and I'm wearing... to keep sweat out of my eyes, because the doctor was pretty adamant that I do that as well, I had to wear a merino wool headband, like one of those really thick ones wrapped around my forehead.
I was hoping you'd go like Bjorn Borg, you know, with the sort of red, white, and blue headband over the hair and the ears, and then the aviators.
I was basically there. So yeah. I'm in CompuTrainer with the wool headband and the aviators and just wearing bibs, no jersey. Well, I wore a sports bra, otherwise that would be super awkward, or not. But yeah, rocking the CompuTrainer with the aviators and the sweatbands. So I feel like at this point, I can't really judge anybody, and I just have to embrace that we're all there to get a good workout, and workout we do.
So there are people out there who detest the trainer and do anything they can to stay off it. You seem to embrace it.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Like, there's something about... I think it's the OCD in me, because when you're on the road, like on a bicycle on the road, and you're training, there are certain things that can cause you to deviate from the scheduled plan, or your heart rate drops or something. Like, I don't know.
Or if you have a downhill and you can't keep your wattage up.
Yeah, downhill, stop signs, a deer crossing the road, like an old lady or something, or traffic or whatnot. And for the OCD tendencies in me, that's like, oh my God, my heart rate dipped below the exact zone it's supposed to be in. This workout is a waste. I should just go home and give up. Whereas the trainer, there's no interruptions. Like, you just sit there and you do the workout, and it is perfect. If you stop pedaling for 1 second, you're a terribly lazy person and you should retire. But I guess some part of me a while ago accepted that that's a necessary evil, and then it became like a habit, and now it's sort of an addiction. Like those people that lick doorknobs. I just feel like it's like a twitch, like, I'm going to ride the trainer today. And, you know, as much as people like to make fun of my predilection for doing something so ridiculous, like, why ride a bike if you're not going to go outside? I do prefer riding outside, of course. I'm not totally insane. But I just, it's a necessary evil in this area. Like, you live in an area where there's precipitation, the roads are crappy, and cars don't know how to drive when it's shitty out, and so you don't want to be on the road on your bike, or it gets dark at 3 p.m., or, you know, it's 40 degrees and raining, or it's 13 degrees and windy, and it's just, I don't want to mess with that. I don't have time to mess with that. I have training to do. I have jobs to do off the bike. It's like if I have a two-hour workout, the trainer is a consistent way that I can get that. And by going to CompuTrainer, I don't know how much people know about CompuTrainer. I don't know if that's really a widespread phenomenon or if that's something that more in kind of city areas you get those studios.
I think it's probably more and more dense areas. So yeah, explain exactly what you're...
So it's basically you ride the trainer, but you ride it in a way that you're hooked up to a computer where an entire room of people are doing the same workout, but each person's trainer is set to their specific FTP. So basically everybody is doing the workout at the same level for them personally. So the lady next to me on the CompuTrainer who rides twice a week is feeling like she's working just as hard as I am doing the exact same terrain, except we're each at different levels of riding. So it's just, you know, I sounded like a dying animal the other day at CompuTrainer. Like I'm gasping and wheezing and I thought I was going to weep after the eighth effort that we did. And, you know, I'm doing the same exact workout as the 65-year-old woman next to me, but it's equally hard for us both. And that's the beauty of CompuTrainer is it gives everybody a chance to ride. Like it forces you to ride at a certain level that is your level of difficulty that's established by the person managing the session. So you go, you do the workout. And for me, that's also very helpful because instead of, if I wake up at home and think, I'm going to ride the trainer for 90 minutes, usually at like 8 p.m., I'll be like, I'm going to ride the trainer for 90 minutes. And it just, I put it off all day. Whereas for CompuTrainer, tomorrow class starts at 9. So it's like either I get my butt to class at 9 or I'm not doing CompuTrainer tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And that for me is very motivating because it means I have to get up. I have to be there at a specific time. I have to get my workout done.
So it gives that accountability.
Like yeah. And I train at my coach's studio. So she gets to sit there and watch me and she'll point out things like, you are muscling your way through this versus finessing it. Like, fix this. Don't do it this way. Don't do it that way. Like, stop using, you know, this like as a cheat to accomplish the level of power that's required. And that sort of guidance for me is helpful because I like being shamed and punished in front of a room of people.
Sounds like you picked the right career then. So if you're not on the CompuTrainer, how do you make the time go by? Are you listening to music, podcasts, watching TV, or just like, I got to do these intervals?
Oh, I would definitely not listen to a podcast. Podcasts are lame.
They are lame.
I listen to music a lot. I beat songs to death. Like if I find a song I like, I'll listen to it 40 times in a row, which is, I don't know why, that's really weird, but I do music. I used to watch movies or shows. Now I can't. Now I get really angry at the characters and just want to kill everybody. So music, sometimes I play games on my phone, like really mindless games, solitaire, dots, like stuff that you can just totally tune out or quit in the middle and not care. I read the internet. So if it's like a recovery day and I'm just doing a quick 1 hour spin, I'll just read stuff. I do work emails. I write blog posts.
Wow. So you're writing a blog post while on the trainer?
Yeah, I actually do that a lot. Most of the posts I've written in the last probably 3 months have been written while pedaling. Because it's like, what else are you going to do? If you're not doing a workout, you're just sitting there.
Yeah. And,
I mean, you can grow
lost. I have a smart trainer right over there if you want to set it up. I don't know if you can fit on any of my bikes, but.
You're a little tall. And I rode outside today.
Oh, nice.
Miracles.
It was actually a nice day out here.
Yeah.
Like 40 to 50-ish out there.
Yeah, it was like 50-something. I was a little overdressed. It was nice.
And your eyes were watering the whole time with the LASIK.
Yeah. So there was a really bad headwind going west. And so I had to keep stopping and putting in drops, keep the eyes moist. By the time I got home, they were red and they hurt. So I'm hoping that that's just a short-term side effect, although a lot of people have told me that after LASIK, they had dry eyes for a long time.
So when you race, did you have to wear contacts before?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have to, but for me and the sake of everybody around, it was better if I did. I wore them to see for distance, and I just never got along with them. I'd always feel, well, ironically, my eyes would always be dry and they would be uncomfortable. But I hated the contacts. They were a huge pain in the butt. And so since I was back here and had some time where I wasn't traveling and the doctor had said I didn't have to stop training, I went ahead and did it. And then the next morning I was a CompuTrainer.
So what is all this training leading towards? Where do you start your season?
Well, I'm training for the Indoor World Championships.
Awesome. Nice.
I'm going to crush Compu Trainer Worlds. I think my season will probably begin at Chico, the Chico stage race in Chico, California, which is, you know, normally I start with Valley of the Sun, but I think this year I'm going to try a different approach. Instead of going out and hitting all of the early season races and then flaming out fantastically by like mid-May, I think I'm going to try and start a little bit later and be a bit more focused in my approach and spend the time between now and then just training indoors. Maybe I am going west, so yeah. I'm not taking the trainer with me.
That was like when you came in, you were like, I bought a plane ticket and I can't take my trainer. And yeah. You seemed really, this was like, you're at odds with this decision.
Well,
you know, you could just pay the $50 or $75 or whatever, you know, extra luggage.
Don't encourage me.
Cost. I will. And take it with you.
Well, I'm also taking everything else I own. So that's going to okay. be a problem. But yeah. When I was buying the plane ticket, I had originally planned to drive out west because that's what I do. I drive. So it's like, oh, you want to go to Japan? Like, let's drive. Just drive. Why not? So I was going to drive. And then actually this past weekend, while riding the trainer in Charleston, it occurred to me I should fly. So I thought, there's really nothing I need to bring. Like, I like to travel with my slow cooker, but I think I could skip bringing that. So it's like, there's really nothing I need to bring that wouldn't like allow me to just fly.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought the ticket and I wasn't thinking. And then my teammate and dear friend texted me and she's like, you can't bring the trainer. And for a split second, I shit you not, I actually thought, I can still cancel the ticket. It's within 24 hours. And then I realized that is insane because also the people I'm going to go stay with, I gave them a trainer last year. So there's one there.
Okay.
It's so waiting. You're set. It's waiting.
But do they have a slow cooker?
Yes, they
do. Oh, you're all set.
Yes. And they have a pig. So there's that.
Well, there you go. Soon you're going to have just this cache of trainers and slow cookers in cities all across the U.S. Yeah. You'll be able to just drop in and go.
A girl can dream.
Yeah. And Petey Scotch.
Oh, yes, indeed. That's the one sponsor I'd like to add to the team's roster. We don't have a really good, solid alcohol sponsor.
Yeah.
And I feel like as a team owner, I'm really sort of falling short.
Well, I mean, my best team sponsor is Acme Pie.
That's pretty good.
So that's pretty much, I think that's the first sponsorship agreement that we both get something really great out of it. You know, Sol sells at races and is sort of ingrained in the cycling community, and then I get pie.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's still no scotch.
No, it's true. Well, you know, both.
So if any scotch companies are listening, call me. Hey.
Yeah, so speaking of listening, how's that for a segue? We got some good feedback from the first time that we talked, and
my mom loved it.
What, you know, how did that go over
with my mom?
Yeah.
Well, it was good.
She's gonna listen to this one too, you know.
She is.
Yeah.
Hi, mom. So it was super weird because I'm in bed at home, which currently is my parents' house. Hey. And I'm laying in bed and I'm on my laptop and I'm doing work and being my cranky, surly teenage self as I want to do when I'm at home with my parents. And suddenly from the next room, I hear you and me. I'm like, whoa.
Oh, man.
Weird. And then, you know, we talked for a really long time, so I had
that's
to listen.
Just like
I listened
parents,
to me for a
not,
while.
Not to have earbuds, but just playing it into the air.
Well, I figure, like, I think, you know, it's her house, so she honey badger, don't give a shit. Like, she wants to play it out loud. Like, go on with your bad self. So she listens to the podcast. She loves it. I hear her laughing. It's really weird to hear someone laughing out loud to me being me, because I'm like, I'm not funny. I'm just really weird. And it was good, though. I feel like her comment was that she got a lot of insight into things that she didn't really know a lot about beforehand. And I guess it doesn't occur to me that I'm not a great sharer. Well, that occurs to me a lot. I'm aware of that. Sorry, Mom. But I don't think I really carry the plot through with a lot of people. Like, oh, here's how I got into this and why I decided to do this. And I just sort of do. And so I think for her, at least, it was very helpful to hear the backstory and kind of the rationale and some of the stuff that you and I uncovered just in the course of a conversation about it. And I think the moral of the story is, if you want me to talk in the future, just bribe me with alcohol.
and stick a microphone in your face too helps.
Oh God, that's going to come up at the next family dinner. Please don't.
You're going to get to dinner, they're going to have like a boom mic set up. I know you're comfortable like this, Lindsay.
But it was, I think it was interesting just to see the response overall. People yeah. were very complimentary, which was awesome. I felt very flattered by the positive feedback. And nobody pointed out that you're a total creeper for inviting me to your basement and then talking about it.
Good. I may have gotten some comments like that, but.
Well, I feel like when you led originally with, let's do it in my basement, you're setting yourself up for that.
Yeah.
That happens.
That did happen. All right. Well, no, I think that it was, the feedback really was good. And I think that a lot of the topics that you touched on and that you were willing to talk about, and I think especially when we got into body image and eating disorders and that type of stuff, not everybody's going to be open about those things. So I think that was really, really neat and a good service for you to talk about that kind of stuff.
It seems weird to me that people are not willing to be more, I don't know if it's like societally we've made certain things taboo to talk about, or if it's like in the sport culturally it's unacceptable, or if people are just afraid to look weak or bad.
Well, I think you just, that was the word I was going to use. I think in the sporting sense, no one wants to look weak. I mean, the whole goal is to look invincible, or try to at least portray that or come across that way. So I think that's something that people mask.
It seems like that's so pointless, and it's so much energy dedicated to something that in the end you have so little control over, because you can try as hard as you want to look invincible and totally unbreakable, but then you have a bad race. And if you're a pro, like, people notice, or you get injured, or you flame out, or you quit, or something, anything, or somebody else totally calls you out publicly for, you know, I read recently about two female pros and they had a feud over a certain race, and it's like publicly the cracks become very visible. So why not just admit from the beginning that part of being human and an athlete and being a whole person is that you're going to screw up. Like, you're going to have problems. You're going to have issues. And for me, when I first started talking about the eating disorder stuff, I actually came out with it on my blog. And one of the biggest confrontations I had about that was with my mother, because she was really upset that I put it out there publicly. And I guess I didn't really realize at the time how many of her friends and coworkers read my blog. But for her, it put her in the awkward position of, she'd be at work and people at work would come up and ask about her daughter's eating disorder. And for her, that felt very uncomfortable and overly personal.
Do you think that she also maybe felt responsible in some way, or was taking some blame or guilt in it, or
I don't think
that it was just that you were willing to be public about it?
I think it's just a different generation. Like, my mother didn't, like, she knows that she did nothing to contribute to it. Like, she my mother's been amazing at supporting me basically my entire life. I don't think I have a bigger fan out there or a more positive person, but I think it was very difficult for her to read that kind of thing coming from her only child. Like, wow, my only child is sick and broken and having these problems and broadcasting them publicly. She would never in a million years post that kind of thing on the internet. And so it was a big clash there. And she's like, why would you want to share that? And other people asked me the same thing with slightly less vigor. And my response to that was, because I think you should, because you're human. Everybody's human. It's okay to have problems. The important thing is being willing to say, I have problems, and then show that the result is coming out of it. Like, I had a horrible breakup a few months back and I shared it on the blog, and someone asked me following that, like, why would you put that on the internet? Like, why would you share that? Why don't you just write a diary and not put it out there? And my answer is, because I was confident, even in the worst of it, that the end would be a good story, in the sense of, this bad thing happened. I had a really hard time. I felt really terrible for a while, but I came out of it, and you can too. And people read my blog. And when I came out with the eating disorder, I got a lot of messages. When I came out with the breakup, I got a lot of messages from people writing and saying, thank you so much for sharing because I have this too. And, you know, I have a good, I'd call her a good friend now that we started talking just in the last like 2 weeks because she read my blog and had a problem herself, like a big problem that hurt her emotionally a lot. And she and I have now been emailing almost every day, just talking, like trying to help each other out. And to think me sharing something like that on the internet, A, helped somebody and actually made them feel less alone and gave them a person to reach out and talk to. Like, there's nothing but positives there. I don't feel the least bit ashamed of, like, admitting what? That I have a life and I'm human? Like, find me one person who hasn't gotten their ass kicked at some point by something, hasn't gotten sick, hasn't had problems, been depressed, gotten totally just, like, run over by life. And I think it's, you know, it's important to show that that happens to people that are in some ways aspirational. Like, there's a lot of people that have contacted me to say things about like, oh, your riding is great. That's cool. And I like to show like, yeah, I do these good things on the bike. I also have problems that I then deal with and it's okay to have those. And I guess in a way I kind of want to be a positive role model for everybody showing that it's okay to have eating issues, breakups, stress, like burnout, desire to retire, quit, run away and never come back. And then to figure out how to get past it and keep going because that's life. Like, you're always going to have shit.
And I think that your approach to it also, what I like is you're not, you're very straightforward about these things. You're very blunt about these things. It's not, you're not pandering for sympathy. You're just like, this is what happened. This is the way it is. And you sort of just, you're very like, just, you know, black and white about what any of these issues are, good or bad, that you write about. And I like that. And I think that that is something that people relate to because you're able to share that without it just being, oh, you know, feel sorry for me.
There's just so many things in life that if you actually step back, even with your own hardships, are really funny or at least amusing. And it's dark, but like even in my worst moments, like there's just things that, like I, you know, after the breakup, when it was really just, I was horribly traumatized and I was crying and crying and crying, but I needed to move out of my apartment and I'm literally climbing in the dumpsters of the building, digging through people's trash, smelling the boxes to see like, can I pack my stuff in this one? And you look at that and you think, this is a horrible moment and I'm heartbroken, but that part's temporary. Remembering the humor of dumpster diving, like I'm in my 30s. I'm a successful white collar professional and I'm climbing through the trash looking for boxes. Or even things like, I live with my parents now. Like, you know, if you look at your own life, even in the worst moments and realize like, this is life and there's a lot of funny things and there's amusing ways to look at everything. Like, it's just, it makes approaching everything so much more manageable and enjoyable. And when I write, for a lot of the posts, I write because it's my way of sorting through things and it makes me feel better to kind of take everything I'm thinking that's sort of like a hurricane of insanity in my brain and then figure out a way to say it and just put it out there. Like, that's helpful. It helps me kind of deal with feelings and sort things out, but it's also a really good opportunity to look for the humor because nobody wants to read like an endlessly weepy, like, wah, wah. People are more entertained by a more straightforward approach to like, okay, this happened.
Yeah.
And well, sometimes it's going to be dark, but
comedy doesn't happen without pain. I mean, it's pathos.
Yeah. You know,
it's not going to work.
But it's so. Like, you can look at like, oh, I spent all winter riding the train or wah, wah. Or you can look at it like, okay, it's kind of funny that there's people who keep posting on Instagram, like these beautiful training photos. Like, oh my God, you're in Spain. You're in Australia. Like, yeah, well, I'm in the garage and it reeks. Like, I don't know if that's fertilizer or trash or what, but like, it's terrible. And in the middle of my workout, like, my mom will come out and be like, hey, and I'm sandwiched between the wall and her car. It's like 2 feet of space. I set water bottles on top of her car. Like, that's how close it is. And like, that's funny. It's funny to think like, that's my life. And, you know, I'm enjoying it. Like, even the bad stuff, even the really crappy stuff that's happened, the eating stuff, the breakup, the move, the retirement, the everything, like, that makes for a very complete life. Because without the crappy stuff, I think you lose sight of how good the good stuff is. And a lot of that comes into racing. Like, if you don't have really crappy races, you don't appreciate what it's like to get on the podium. I mean, I would love to have the problem of always winning. And if we get there, if that becomes my problem, like, it's going to be a very different podcast. But I think it's just the balance is so important in so many things.
Yeah. Speaking of going back to some of that, especially the racing and the retiring, one thing that we didn't touch on last time is, and now that you're getting back into it, is that when you announced that you were retiring, and I think it was in that blog post that you had out there, you talked about, for the first time in your racing career, being able to just sit up and quit and being okay with it. Do you think that's still going to be how you feel when you get back to racing?
I don't know. No, I mean, obviously, deep down, I don't think that I'll feel that way. And I don't know. Like, there were a lot of things going on in my life at the time that led to me deciding to retire that, frankly, don't exist anymore. Like, the biggest one was I wanted to have a kid. And I still want to, but that's not happening now. Not for a while. And I think at the time, I kind of had a half-formed idea of what my next step would be. And because I always go all in with everything, for better or worse, I just went all in with that. And for me, there was no gray area. Like, okay, so it's going to be have a kid, and I'm going to do this life, and I'm going to focus on my career, I'm going to go to grad school, I'm going to do this. And I backfilled all the other stuff. Like, okay, well, you know, it's time to be done. You know, you were feeling these things, you were kind of tired, you were kind of burned out, you had a lot of injuries, like, it's not worth it. And there were things that happened last season that, like, watching some of my colleagues in the Peloton get very injured, like, it scared me. And I looked at that and thought, that's something good to walk away from. Like, I'm going to reduce risk, and I'm going to have a different life, and I get to drink as much scotch as I want without worrying about training. I can eat as much as I want without worrying about training. I can travel the world and not take a bike or a trainer with me. That seemed very appealing. And so when it came time to make a decision, it felt like a relief. Like, cool, I'm signing up for this new and exciting plan. But in the absence of some of the main factors of that, and now that I'm really focused on training and looking at a season and revisiting the goals that I've always had and thinking, okay, how can I actually make that happen? I have no regrets about coming back. I almost feel like I can't remember why I thought it was a good idea to walk away. And I think, like, by picking a more focused calendar for 2017 and really targeting events and then committing, like, instead of I'm going to do all of the races and I'm going to do mediocre at all of them, saying I'm going to do these select events and I'm going to do well, it requires a certain level of commitment that I think I've been scared to put out there. Because if you say, I'm going to do all the races, like, people are like, okay. But if you say, like, if I say to Jono, the team director, I want to do well at Redlands. I mean, for me, that's terrifying. Because then it says, like, to everybody, Lindsay is trying to do well at Redlands. So what if I don't? Like, what if I finish 40th? What if I can't? What if I give it my absolute best and I'm not good enough? That's scary. But I think now, it's kind of shit or get off the pot at this point. Like, I'm at the level in cycling now. I'm starting to have enough experience and enough strength to combine the two and turn it into results. And if I can't, that's probably a good time to figure it out. But I'd like to put it out there and say, like, okay, these are my goals. They are concrete targets. Let's see what I can do.
So you're going to race Gastown?
I don't know. Not because of, like, if it doesn't work out schedule-wise, it doesn't work out schedule-wise. Would I not race it because of that photo? No. So when I showed up at the race this year, because I did race it this year, the crash was 2015. So I did it.
Okay.
I did it this gotcha. Year. And for the entirety of the time prior to the start of that race, people would not shut the hell up about the damn crash. And I wanted to kill everybody. Like, I seriously, dude, if I'm rolling up to the start line of a bike race, do not ask me about a crash. Right. Do not talk to me about a crash. Do not remind me about that one time at that one bike race I ate shit in front of the entire world. Like, don't worry. I haven't forgotten. But the number of people that felt the need to tell me about that crash on race day, it was astonishing.
Yeah.
It's like, people just don't have a filter at all.
Right.
But yeah.
Now that's back in the news.
It is.
Because you got Stefan to
submit
that photo to the Cycling Tips photo.
I did.
Contest.
It was for a good cause.
Well, and he ended up winning a bike. He got first place in his category.
He did. And he very much deserved it because that photo was an astonishing combination of timing and skill and talent and right place, right time,
and
right
Christophe Ramon is, I mean, one of the best in the business was like, that's one of the greatest cycling photos I've seen.
And I think the sting of being the star of an embarrassing photo has faded. That faded a long time ago. And now I can just see it as it's a brilliant piece of art and he deserves
it. And that's the thing. And I don't think even you would have to tell people that's you at this point. I think people just see that and it just tells such an amazing story.
You know, when it first came out, I was horribly embarrassed. My dear friend who lives in this area, as a joke, requested a framed version of that photo for his birthday. So I got it for him. I framed it, autographed it. And at the time it was still cringe inducing, but now it's like, it was a good contest for a good cause to honor a great photographer who passed away. And I couldn't think of a better photo. And so I figured why not just let it come back out. Like I'm not embarrassed anymore. Like,
okay. You had me confused. The contest is named after a photographer who passed away. Stefan's still with him.
Right.
Okay, good.
So it's like, find me a cyclist who hasn't crashed.
Oh yeah.
And I'll find you a cyclist who has never ridden a bike. Like so what? I crashed. I mean, there's been,
and it you're right. And it does. It certainly is a debate that goes on a lot. It's going on right now, especially in cyclocross. It's, you had this Italian World Cup that was just a crash fest. So do you exploit that? Is that the kind of stuff that, when you're showing video clips that, people will come and look at your site by just showing crash? It's almost pornographic in that sense. And that's where that line is. It's that versus what he did, which is just, it tells such a story. I mean, it's a dramatic.
It's a totally. So I remember there was an Athens Twilight Criterium a few years ago. And for those of you who don't know a lot about road racing, Athens Twilight is like the Super Bowl of American crit racing. And just huge amounts of spectators, lots of drama, intensity, etc. So the men's race is going on and there is a nasty pileup caused by, I don't even remember the initial cause, but it was something about then ultimately an official's motorcycle was left on the course to block the crash. And it ultimately caused another massive pileup that the fans were going crazy. There's bodies flying through the air. And I don't think anybody was seriously injured, but that made the rounds. And in that case, I felt like that was gross because it felt like people were just watching these bike racers who to me are like friends and they're people I can relate to. And people are watching them like they are sides of beef getting thrown into the pavement, and people in the crowd, you can hear them cheering. Like,
yeah,
I want to be like, do you realize that's a person?
Right.
But in my case, like, there was nothing about that course or that situation that was wrong that caused the crash. What caused the crash was I screwed up. Like, I overcooked going into that turn. I slid out. People have asked me, like, oh, what happened?
And it's not even, I mean, the photo, it's not a crash photo. The photo, what makes the photo so dramatic is it's you are perfectly still while people are flying around you at 20 plus miles per hour through a turn. That's what makes it dramatic, and that you're in the middle of it in a fetal position.
And it's like he captured that perfect moment, and good for him.
Yeah,
he deserves all the credit in the world for being there, because that ultimately, as a photographer, that's what it's about, like finding that amazing moment and having everything in position to just capture it perfectly. Yep. And he nailed it and deserved to win that contest. And I just hope to not be the subject of a lot more photos like that.
you've done it now. You've met your burden in that sense. You further the cause of cycling photography. So how's your team doing? They're down you got people racing in Australia.
We do. They just wrapped up Tour Down Under. Peter Mullins brought home 6th in the GC in a very, very competitive field. So super happy about that. The team is doing well. We had, I get tons of photos and positive reports every day, all day, that remind me of all my failings in life because I'm in Northern Virginia right now. But yeah, they're doing really well. They've got one more race towards the end of the month. They're doing the Cadell's Road Race. And then the riders will come home and eventually our Australian riders will join us here for the American racing season. So it's been a great start to the season. It's really weird to think that we're already actually a number of races into the year when for me it feels like we still have a while to go.
Oh, it's still cyclocross season.
It's like, what?
in the same way that we have to hear about, you know, racing in September and that it's still road season. You know, this is the other side of it.
Cyclocross is coming, cross is coming, cross is coming, mm-hmm. starting in like April.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't get that.
Well, I mean, the season ends, you know, the end of February, so that's a month off.
Yeah. I'm still thinking I might do a bit of cross. It's been like watching some of the races, and my coach plays some of the races on the wall during CompuTrainer. Mm. And when you can either look at your CompuTrainer numbers or you can watch the race wins. And I have to say, it looks insane. Like, if you think about it, it really is ridiculous. Like, why are these people carrying their bicycle? But it also looks kind of fun. And I'm thinking, and even talked to one of my teammates about maybe doing a bit of cross together.
I think that would be wonderful.
Ask me in like 6 months.
Okay, I will.
Bribe me with pie.
I can do that. I can definitely do that. So, you know, we talked about the feedback that you got for the first conversation that we had. And I was really happy with the way that it went. And I think that you are a compelling person to talk to and thoughtful and also really good at this. So we sort of had some conversations about you doing a podcast.
That's a terrible idea. What am I going to just hide in your basement and record?
Well, you know, you'd have to go out on your own and record your own. If you wanted to, you know, you could book time down here. I could leave and you could bring some other victims down here of your own. You could be a disciple.
Okay. Yeah, I would love to do that. I think, you know, I'm fortunate enough in the course of the season to spend some time with really interesting people who have a lot to say for better or worse. And I think it could be interesting to kind of try and play you, lock people in my basement or like the trunk of my car and make them talk about their feelings.
Yeah, that's the formula for a successful podcast that I've learned. Either that or Skype.
Oh. I actually did I did sports psychology by Skype for like 6 months.
Yeah.
I saw a therapist. Yeah. Talking about your feelings to your computer screen. It's really weird, especially the one time my dog came in and pooped on the floor next to me. And I didn't
How are you feeling? Did you let it go? Or
well,
I
pretended it didn't happen because I felt like I didn't want to interrupt the Skype to be like, hey, I need to deal with this. So,
but isn't that the opposite of what you should have been doing? Like with
probably.
This?
I was very repressed. So literally I spent like 30 minutes of a Skype session talking about my feelings while there was a steaming pile of dog crap right next to me. And I'm just like, okay, this is great. Like, I'm not going to break eye contact. The dog is just sitting there. The poop is sitting there. Yeah, Skype. Good stuff.
Yeah. Well, but you love the opportunity to do everything in person, so.
Indeed.
So we're going to hook you up with some recording equipment, some microphones.
Okay.
You're going to go out there. We were discussing a name.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to let you announce that. Go on with your bad self, Dad.
Dirtfield Recordings.
Okay, I like it. Yeah. Do you want to tell people why it's that?
Well, just because like anthropology and field recordings, and you already have the name, the Dirtfield, from your mountain biking glory days and your
actually
blog.
That came long before cycling.
Really?
Yeah, I worked at a courthouse. I was a clerk, and I worked with this really sassy older lady.
I love
and
this. Yeah.
One time, we were talking about, I think, relationships.
I can't believe that I've made it this far without actually just assuming and not asking you the origin of the dirt field.
Yeah, so we're talking about relationships, and I'm getting married like that weekend. And I said something about some other dude that I was not marrying. And she says to me something along the lines of, the grass is not always greener on the other side. Sometimes you get there, and it's just a dirt field. And that stuck
amazing.
With me.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That is amazing.
And despite
that's so much better.
Like a million years ago getting that advice, I have spent the entirety of my adult life always chasing that green grass. Like, oh, surely on that side of the fence, it's going to be greener. It's not. So yeah, that's the dirt field.
Yeah.
So the dirt, what is it? The dirt field recordings?
Dirt field recordings. DFR.
Oh, that's like DFL.
But it's DFR.
Okay.
Dead fucking right.
Ooh, I like that. I can't wait till I have a nickname like KFC. That'd be good.
Yeah. Well, could get there.
Goals.
13 more national championships. And
dude, that's insane.
I know. Plus, she was, you know, wasn't even a full-time cyclocross. She was competing in the Paralympics on the track.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But I got to be honest, the one thing that always, like, I've met her. She's amazing. Mm-hmm. Super cool, totally chill, really down to earth. But one of the most memorable stories that I remember about her is the time that she announced having really bad saddle sore issues and having a cyst the size of like an orange that ruptured on the way to the hospital. And it's like, I feel like it's so disrespectful that this is our like million time national champion. And for some reason, I always think, cyst the size of an orange ruptured. But it's just that.
But look, see, that's what you all have in common. She will say that with, you know, just sort of.
And I love that she was willing to share it. Yeah. Because trust me.
She's one of the most open people I've ever talked to.
We've all had saddle sore. If you have not had a saddle sore, you are not riding enough. You need to ride more. Or send me your secrets.
Yeah. So the dirt field.
Recordings.
The dirt that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And you all should look out for that. We're going to let Lindsay go out there, maybe get a couple episodes under her wing. Is that right? And then see where it goes from there.
I'm a bird. Wow, you're dadding out over there.
Stop it. It's because I told you how old I was. Now all of a sudden, or maybe it's my two kids upstairs. One of those things.
What were the dinosaurs like?
Pretty cool. Yeah. Pretty cool. Especially the ones that you could, I mean, if you could get Jesus off of them, they were fun to ride.
You kind of look like Jesus, to be honest. When we're done here, can I confess my sins?
You may. That's what this podcast is all about.
How much time do you have?
Yeah, you know, it's true. Like, thanks for coming by again. Anything else we got to talk about? Well, should we just wait until the next,
I was gonna say,
the next half full bottle of scotch that you want to get rid of?
Well, I mean, I can definitely come up with more scotch, but I'll save some dirty secrets for the next podcast.
That sounds like a plan.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.